And he does fluid dynamics, and then Blaine Connick does medical physics. So what I do is kind of a combination of the two. And I'm looking at PAA phantoms, which are used in MRI heating experiments. So when you have a patient and they come in and they need an MRI scan, but they have a medical implant, such as like a plate or a disc, most of which are made of metal, there can be complications with the MRI scan because eddy currents will form in the metal. It can heat up and potentially give them internal burns. So an important thing you have to look at is the temperature rise induced by these implants inside the patient's body during an MRI scan. So the way to do these experiments to make sure these patients don't get burned is using these phantoms. And phantoms are just a type of fluid. There's lots of different kinds of them, and they simulate human tissue in different ways. The one that's widely used for MRI implant heating experiments is polyacrylic acid phantom, and or PAA phantom. And the reason it's called that is just polyacrylic acid is the gelling agent used in it. And since it's in the medical industry, there's some really specific instructions for fabricating these. There's this ASTM standard, the American Society for Testing and Materials. They have this specific standard that you're supposed to follow when you're making these. And so part of my research was I followed this standard, and I looked at, here's the standard, or some parts of it. So I looked at different sections and just to make sure that people couldn't still be following the instructions but get different results from these phantoms. So I just followed these instructions. It's pretty simple. You have distilled water, and then for every liter of distilled water, 1.32 grams of salt, 10 grams of the gelling agent, PAA. Just add the salt to the water, and then add the gelling agent, and then, well, this is where it gets a little bit weird. Here, where it's like, it tells you to blend the suspension, but it doesn't tell you what kind of blender to use. It recommends a kitchen-grade immersion blender, which is just like a hand blender that you usually use for mashed potatoes. But it doesn't require that. So I also did some of my experiments with a hand blender, or a standing blender, I mean, which is a lot more vigorous. So it might not be as realistic, but it'll give me the more extreme results just to kind of see what happens. Because the reason I'm interested in this is the instructions don't tell you how long to blend it for. It says at least 20 minutes, but there's no maximum time, which is kind of interesting. So one of the things I looked at was to see if you could potentially overblend these samples to make them not useful for these experiments. So just before I get into more my research, I'm going to quickly just give an introduction to rheology and the one major concept that I used in my research is the difference between a gel and a viscous liquid. And it's pretty simple. A viscous liquid, when you look at its viscosity. At any viscosity, convection will occur in a viscous liquid. It doesn't matter how viscous it is, there's always going to be thermal convection. But in a gel, it's a little different. A gel has a yield stress. So at low stresses, a gel will act as a solid, and there will be no convection at low stress. Then at higher stress, the gel will flow like a viscous liquid. And then another thing about a gel, you can tell if a fluid is a gel or not if its elastic modulus is greater than its viscous modulus, because an elastic modulus is how you characterize a solid, and viscous modulus is how you characterize a liquid. The reason that I'm going into this is in the human body, we don't have these convection currents taking heat away from a source. So when a patient has an implant, the implant is heating, there's not going to be any currents dispersing that heat through their body to prevent them from being burned by it. So we have to make sure in these samples that we're looking at that this isn't happening, because we'll be getting lower temperature differences around the implant in the experiments. So in the experiments, the temperature difference will be lower, and we can potentially think that the implant won't burn a patient when really it will. So my general research question was, will the ambiguous variables in the standard affect the outcome of these MRI implant heating experiments? The two ambiguous variables that I looked at were blend time and sample aging. And blend time I was talking about before, that there's no maximum blend time. So I looked at a bunch of different blend times. And then sample aging, the reason I say that is down here when it says the gelled saline should have a shelf life of 2 months. So I just wanted to make sure that there weren't huge changes in the viscoelastic properties over 2 months, because that could potentially also affect these heating experiments. And I just forgot to mention before that, so when you're doing these MRI experiments with the Phantom, the sample you're using is about 50 liters. It's like a crude human torso and head. Whereas I haven't actually got to the part where I put these in the MRI. So what I do is I just make little 500 milliliter experiments to use with this little machine. And so in the instructions, it tells you blend for at least 20 minutes. Well, I'm only doing 500 milliliters. I'm not doing these 50 liters. So I kind of scaled it down. I do about 30 seconds to 9 minutes is how much I blend them for. Anyway, so this is a rheometer that I used. And how a rheometer works, this one is, the one that I used is stress controlled, which means that the instrument applies a certain stress and then it measures the strain that the fluid applies back onto the instrument. You just put the fluid sample in the middle, the top plate rotates, the bottom plate is stationary, and I added sandpaper to both the top and bottom plate so that there's no slip against the plates when the fluid's rotating. And the two parameters that I looked at were viscosity as a function of shear stress, and then the elastic and viscous moduli. Okay, so these are my blend time experiments. As I said before, I did some with a stand blender and some with a hand blender. So the stand blender ones are a little bit more extreme, but I just wanted to kind of see what would happen. So the top one, the blue one, is 30 seconds. And you can see that there's a yield stress right here, about. This is like the plateau, like the solid plateau. And then yield stress, and then it slopes down into acting like a viscous liquid. This one, it's a little less clear whether it has a yield stress or not. And then this one, the 9 minutes, it definitely doesn't. This is just a viscous liquid. So this would be completely useless in those MRI heating experiments. So I've already discovered that you can overblend these samples, and then they'll no longer be useful. So this is something that they should probably change in the standard. This is the elastic and viscous moduli. Here, this upper one is the elastic, the bottom one is viscous, which is good. So that means that this 30-second sample is still a gel. However, 3 minutes already blending for 3 minutes is too much because it's no longer a gel. It's kind of in between gel and a viscous liquid. This is completely liquid because this is the viscous modulus. So that just confirms what we saw previously. Now here is the hand blender. So these are the more realistic samples. So they all have a yield stress, but it's pretty clear that the yield stress is it depends on blend time. Like the yield stress decreases as blend time increases. Also, just the general viscosity of the entire fluid decreases. And these are all important things that may or may not have an effect on the MRI experiments that I do later with these samples. This is just confirming that these are all gels because the elastic moduli are all greater than the viscous moduli. But at 2 minutes here, we're getting pretty close. So even with the hand blender, it is possible to overblend. And just looked quickly at aging. I only went up to day 13, so not very close to 2 months. But you can see that there's already a huge difference. It's kind of doing the same, it looks the same, same type of pattern as the blend time. Where here, it's getting a little bit crazy. Like, I don't know if I would trust a day 13 sample to be doing these experiments with. And then that's just this is the 30-second blend-in, and then the exact same thing happens for 1 minute and the 2 minute. So I was just confirming. And then, then this has the exact same pattern, too, as the blend time. So with age, the gel becomes less gel-like and more like a liquid. And that's only for day 6. They're that far apart, so it's interesting. So, just to conclude, it seems pretty clear that blend time drastically affects the viscoelastic properties of these phantoms. It's possible to overblend these samples and make them useless for these experiments. So a maximum blend time should definitely be added to the standards so people don't do this accidentally and ruin their samples. And then also, after only 2 weeks, there's significant changes in the phantom. So in the future, I should probably look more into this, look at exactly how long it takes for these phantoms to change into a viscous liquid. And then the expiration date should be changed accordingly. And then, so my next steps after that, I need to make these 50-liter standard-sized samples in a bunch of different blend times and look at them over time in the MRI to confirm what my suspicions are that a lot of these samples aren't giving correct results when it comes to the temperature change around these implants. And hopefully, paper that I produce about this will induce changes in the standard in the future, which these things take a really long time, but hopefully eventually something good will come of it. Questions?
Could you just explain briefly how you measure the viscosity of your liquid?
The viscosity?
Yeah.
Well, that's the rheometer that. So the. The viscosity and the, like all my measurements really, were made with this rheometer. And you're just looking at the, so it collects the strain, right? And from the strain you can get the viscosity somehow. it gives it to you, I mean, it plots it. I don't really have to do any of the work. Okay. But yeah, it just, there's like the stress, the shear stress changes. Right, and then it measures the strain that the fluid is putting onto the machine, and then it just plots that over time.
Hi, I was just wondering. So, is there why are they using something that you have to mix yourself? Phantoms like these are not available to buy. You know, like some that have just been produced exactly the same way from a manufacturer or something like that. Phantoms like that are not available, or?
Well, I'm not sure if they're not available, but those instructions are like what I showed you, the ASTM standard. That is what people have to use if they want, that's what experimenters have to use if they want their results to be able to be used in medical industry. So that's just kind of like, they give you those rules, so you have to follow them. They even tell you where you have to get the PAA, like what company to buy it from. It's all, like, they tell you, okay, and you have to follow.
But they don't prepare it themselves, so they, I mean, that company who sells it, doesn't prepare it, doesn't blend it.
It's,
they just give it
just
to
the,
you.
It's just the powder, and you mix the three ingredients.